Welcome to See How They Run, horse race coverage from the left, brought to you by The Nation. I'm Dee Dee Guttenplan, editor of The Nation. By the time you hear this, there will be just 10 days to go until Election Day. The chance for either Kamala Harris or Donald Trump to persuade undecided voters will have narrowed to almost nothing. In such a razor-thin election, which party reaches more of its core voters and gets more of them to actually cast a ballot could decide the next presidency more than any ad, speech, scandal, or town hall. That's why there's been so much focus in 2024 on the topic of this episode, the ground game. Anxious Democrats are hoping that their get-out-the-vote operation, which they often describe as much more sophisticated than Trump's, will give them the edge. But how much better is that operation really? Can it make that much of a difference? And what does it even mean to have a good ground game these days? To discuss all of this, I'm thrilled to be joined by Yasmin Radji, executive director of the progressive campaigning organization Swing Left, who, by the way, sent me out to knock on doors in Bucks County a month ago and who I'm looking knocking doors for again right before the election. And the nation's own Jeet here, who's been following every twist and turn of this election for us. Welcome, both of you, to See How They Run.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, it was great to be on.
What do we mean by a ground game these days when so much contact is done through social media?
It's a great question. I think the way that we see it is our orientation at the beginning of the cycle was back to basics of even as engagement online increases, the urgency of offline face-to-face engagement for voters remains sky high. And so we use digital tactics to recruit volunteers like yourself to make sure that anybody who wants to participate in our politics but may not know where to begin, maybe they're a little bit overwhelmed by how many emails and texts and whatever they're getting, they're not sure where their impact is greatest. We use digital tactics to find those folks. And then a lot of the really traditional tactics of field offices and getting out and talking to people face to face remain highly effective. We continue testing the efficacy of those tactics. So that's just don't take our word for it. We're testing constantly. And the biggest shift that's happened is not that those conversations are much different than they were in 2008. It's just we are better equipped to have more of those because rather than a traditional packet with printed maps of where to go, basically every single field office in the country is using Minivan, which is the app version of that, meaning it's that much easier for volunteers to participate. But those face-to-face conversations remain extremely important for the persuasion conversations that we continue to have with undecided voters. And then, of course, the mobilization conversations for people who are going to vote for our side but aren't sure whether or not they're going to vote.
So let's talk a little bit about our side. Swing Left is called Swing Left. Why? And when did you get started? And tell me a little bit about what you do here specifically as an
organization. Yes. So Swing Left started on Trump's inauguration eve in 2017 through a really simple website and premise of our premise was that a lot of people wanted to get involved, were feeling some mix of catatonic, outraged, whatever the emotion they were feeling in 2017, and not sure where they could plug in to have a big impact. And so our website was a place where people could plug in their zip code and immediately get connected to the closest swing house district close to them in order to make sure that people's time and money was being directed to the races that were going to tip the balance of power toward Democrats through our first line of defense against Donald Trump, which was winning back the House. And what happened when we launched in that early moment was that tons of folks all around the country who had never donated to a candidate before, who had never volunteered for a campaign before, got involved, started groups all around the country. We grew to a membership of, we're now 1 million members all across the country. We have 450 volunteer-led groups all around the country. And a high concentration of those are in places that we call blue corridors, cities like where I'm sitting in Washington, D.C., places like San Francisco, where I'm from, the Bay Area, L.A., Chicago, places where people may read publications like yours, feel really, really motivated by the election, but aren't quite sure from where they live, how can they make a difference in a place like Bucks County or a place like Maricopa County? And so through that early website and through our continued work, people get connected back then just to their closest House district and now to the closest place where they can have an impact up and down the ballot. So we are focused on, of course, making sure Donald Trump does not get elected president, but also that we win, we maintain our Senate majority, we win back the House, and we win key governorships and state legislative races. And at every level of the ballot that we are now engaged on, the singular focus is majorities. So we're not playing in primaries. We are not sort of focused on an advocacy agenda. Our premise is we need to first win majorities, and then the hard work of making sure that candidates are doing the right things as elected officials happens across the ecosystem. But until we have those majorities, we can't move forward with anything, as we know, given where Republicans are in terms of blocking literally anything, even for the fundamentals of our democracy.
And Jeet, I know that you always look worried. Listening to this sunny description of leveraging a Democratic majority, I thought you looked more worried. So,
I actually do think. I should lay out the basic facts, which is I do actually think that this is going to be an election about ground game. The ground game is like super important, and I think that the Democrats have certain advantages in that a ground game, one of which is the sort of, you know, wave of enthusiasm. Yasmin had mentioned, you know, like, you know, starting with Trump being elected. But I would actually say, like, in this year in particular, since Joe Biden stepped down and, you know, when Kamala Harris became the presumptive nominee, you had like a huge burst of energy and of new volunteers and a real sort of, and in places like Wisconsin, you have a, you know, like going back, you know, a decade now, you have like a strong grassroots army that has been built up of people that are very eager to, like, you know, do the trench work that you need. And just further to what Yasmin said, I mean, it's partially we have the social science to show this, but also, like, if you just think about your own life, like why the ground game is important is, I think, you know, yes, people are on social media, but they also tune out a lot of stuff, right? Like people, I think, tune out ads they see on TV. They don't read their emails. You know, like they've learned to ignore pleadings from Nancy Pelosi for more money. But like, if you have, you know, someone, you know, who's in your neighborhood, you know, that comes up, or maybe I think even more effective, I think the most effective is people that you actually know. You know, like if you're like in one of those swing states, like just call up everyone that knows you, you know, who are like might be leaning Democratic, that will make a huge difference. So the Democrats are very vested in this and have an infrastructure. And conversely, I think one thing that gives me a little bit of hope is that the Republican ground game is a mess. Donald Trump took over the RNC and has turned it into this kind of shell, which is basically used to, you know, fund his own legal troubles, and is run by his family. And then the their ground game has actually been taken over by like third party groups and by people like Elon Musk, who we have every reason to believe are kind of doing more harm than good for the Republicans, which is all great. So that's the most optimistic side of it. Now, having said that, I think my worry some of this has been really coming out of engaging with Mika Sifrai, who wrote for us in The Nation, is that there are some problems on the Democratic side, one of which is that flood of new volunteers, they have been plugged into the existing infrastructure. And it's not quite clear that the existing Democratic Party infrastructure, like, knows what to do with all the energy and money that they've been getting. And there are signs of trouble with that. So I think that's something that, you know, we have to be concerned about and that we have to deal with it. And the other aspect is, I think the ground game works best if it's not just like, you know, boots on the ground, but if it's integrated within existing political structure. And I think the gold standard here remains Obama's first one in 2008, where they had a very nimble, like very energized ground game that really worked well with local political groups. And since then, I think that the infrastructure has become more bureaucratic and sclerotic. And I mean, some of the blame has to actually go to Obama himself, who after that historic victory kind of dismantled his own machine. But you know, so there's a real question of whether that sort of the infrastructure that they have there can really channel the energy that is needed. That's distinct from groups like the one Yasmin is involved with, which are, you know, like much more grassroots. But I mean, that's where my worry comes from.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's I think it is. First of all, I think we share our hope is shared around the level of enthusiasm that we are seeing from volunteers. We keep comparing it to 2018 because that was the first cycle that Swing Left existed. And we've got the data for it, but it feels more like 2008. I mean, it's something that's infectious. It's amazing. And we really see it as these are the volunteers who are going to win this election for us. These are also the volunteers who are going to be building the Democratic Party for the next decade. So the way that we engage with them, the experiences they have, will be decisive in the sort of year-round, long-term work ahead, because I think all of us are here because we know even if we win the federal trifecta and win power in the states, we have so many fundamental sort of risks to the strength of our democracy if we don't keep winning for the long haul. So I think we share that hope. I would say, you know, I think where I disagree on the sort of the comparison of 2008 to 2024 from an infrastructure perspective is, I mean, I was my first organizing job. My first job in electoral politics was on the 2008 Obama campaign. And if anybody then had talked to me or my colleagues about down ballot races, and folks did, right? They wanted us to pass lit for the down ballot. We didn't give a damn. We were like, we're here for Obama. Who's this random state legislator? Who's this member of Congress? We don't care about that. We're not political people. We care about Barack Obama. We want the presidency. And I think a really major culture shift that has happened in part because of the shellacking we experienced in 2010, but even more so because of the shellacking we experienced in 2016, not just at the presidential level, but down ballot, is I think that we have, from the top to the bottom of the party, really learned the lesson of the importance of integration of the top of the ticket and the bottom of the ticket. And so what that means is when a volunteer calls us and says, I really want to go knock on doors for Kamala Harris in Pennsylvania, they'll ask us, where's a place where my knock is also going to make a difference for a competitive House race and for a competitive state legislative race? And of course, we expect that from super volunteers who do this work year round and long term. But even for someone for whom this is their first time volunteering, they're engaging with that question of how do I maximize my impact? Because they know that it's more than just the White House that matters, even if they can't sort of like deeply talk about things like redistricting or you know, House majorities or what does the Senate do, et cetera. They just have that sort of like it's embedded in our culture and in the narratives of this moment in a way that would have been so foreign to me as a kind of baby organizer in 2008. And the other piece that I think is really, really important is I'm completely with you, Jeet, that if our infrastructure is weak, if state parties are weak, if the data is weak, that's the whole game, right? You can have the most charismatic candidate in the world. If people are knocking on the wrong doors or they have a terrible training or all of those things, then we can't win, right? In an election that's going to come down to the margins because we're not using people's time wisely and the ROI is just lower than it should be and could be. I've been pretty, I think I feel bullish. Our big bet here is rather than building parallel infrastructure, the bet that we make at Swing Left is to invest in the existing infrastructure, both for the short term and the long term. And what I mean by that is rather than set up a separate canvassing operation in a place like Wisconsin, we send our volunteers to go to Democratic Party offices in Wisconsin. And the reason that I think that really matters is, back again, comparing to 2008, there weren't outside groups like Swing Left doing that deep integrated work at this scale. And so the conversations that we have on, gosh, like these scripts aren't really working, or this office didn't really take in volunteers correctly, that all starts so early that it helps the party, the inside and outside game, are married in a way that we just haven't experienced before. And that makes me feel really, now, are things perfect? Absolutely not. Do we need to keep investing deeply and aggressively in state party infrastructure, in campaign infrastructure, make sure campaigns are incentivized to have great field operations? Absolutely. But I think from my vantage point, volunteers and donors are sort of leaps and bounds closer to that than they ever have been. And the infrastructure is stronger, certainly stronger than what we all expected at the beginning of this cycle. But I would say also comparatively stronger than it has been. Definitely was in 2016, but I would even argue 12 and 2012 and 2008 as well.
I think that's a really good response. I just wanted to air some of the stuff that I'm hearing from people who are a little bit worried and see. Yeah. So the other concern that I've had people mention is that this type of canvassing that seems to work the most effectively are the kind of deep conversations where you have the volunteers that are really trained to talk about their personal experience, right? Like not like policy terms, but like, you know, like how something like abortion or Social Security affects them, and then, you know, like bring that out there. And there are people who are sort of saying that, you know, because you have this kind of like flood of volunteers in, that you there hasn't been the chance to like give the training that you need to get the most effective sort of canvassing, which is the, you know, like not just people trained to talk about, you know, the party talking points of the day, but like actually engage. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, I think not only do I agree with you that those deep canvassing, whether it is sort of officially defined as the deep canvassing conversations that are long and require a different kind of training, or the best practices, as you said, of a canvasser who's a great listener, who's getting kind of underneath, if someone's saying, you know, my concern is the invasion at the border, a canvasser who's trained to not argue, but to say, well, tell me more about that. Why are you worried about that? And then underneath that may be a very different anxiety about having recently lost a job, or you know, having been the victim of a, you know, crime or something like that. So totally with you. And also the data is really clear on exactly your point of deeper conversations. We always tell canvassers, especially canvassers who are like, I'm not an economist, how am I going to talk about economic anxieties at the doors when I'm not sure how to talk about capital gains taxes? Those things are not the what makes a great canvasser. What makes a great canvasser is someone who's a great listener, who's curious, who's relational. So totally with you on that. I think the way that we think about the year, sort of in terms of the nature of how canvassing conversations differ, is about 70% of our volunteer shifts that happen between January, and actually happened even in some cases for House districts starting in like April of 2023. Some of this work started really, really early. So call it from April of 2023 down ballot, starting you know, early this year for Joe Biden in the places where there were campaigns set up or offices set up. Those early conversations, about 70% of those folks are our volunteers who do year-round long-term work. So these are the people affiliated with our Swing Left groups. So starting in about April of 2023 for down ballot House races in places like New York and California, and then starting really in sort of January, February, the first quarter of this year, sort of holistically at every level of the ballot in the places where there were operations to plug into, and then, you know, growing more and more every month. About 70% of the people who volunteered at those early, early, early times were our Swing Left group leaders. So about, you know, 450 groups around the country. These are the people who believe deeply in year-round long-term work, and a part of their sort of civic diet every day of the year is doing something to participate in our politics. So for those folks, those are the people who've been trying to do those kind of deep canvassing conversations, whether they were officially deep canvassing or some of those best practices integrated through a campaign. even before some of the campaigns were set up, if they were still hashing it out in the primary, these are the folks who are driving from New York City to upstate New York to talk to people, to talk about those anxieties. And the feedback we would get was some really fruitful conversations, particularly about abortion and the economy, starting really early on. So we call that our organizing universe. And I'm totally with you that if someone is there to just talk at a canvas, talk at a voter in those early phases, not only are they doing it wrong, but they're not sort of following the research around what matters the most. What we call this phase is the mobilization universe of, this is when every person who possibly wants to get involved signs up for a shift. And the biggest challenge is taking in that energy, as you rightly said. If, like, logistically, if you have 400 people showing up on buses at a canvassing location, you need to get them packets. I mean, we talked about in 2018, one of my favorite stories was we had so many people going from Boston up to Maine to go knock on doors that the buses couldn't get to some of the rural field offices. So we had the buses stop at a rest stop, and then a bunch of volunteer carpools come in and fan out so that it would be groups of 5 to 10 people per canvassing office because you couldn't fit 100 people in a place. So there's a logistical piece, and there's these are people who are going to volunteer once or volunteer twice, and that's all they're going to do because they're busy, they've got a lot going on. And there, my worry is less about whether those folks are having deep conversations, in part because of the moment that we're in the cycle, and in part because if they just do so much of, for anybody who's canvassed listening knows this, so much of a canvass is actually not even the conversation piece. It's sort of like you're crossing off the list. Well, this person is, we had them on the list as a potential Kamala supporter. Within 5 seconds of the conversation, they said, I love Donald Trump, and you are leaving the door and doing some like data cleanup person to person. So there's a piece of it that's that. And if those folks are having a human conversation, even if it's not perfect, if that conversation is just listening for a short period of 2 minutes, that is so important because those conversations remain memorable, even if that person gets a B in that conversation, doesn't do the A plus. And then if we do our work right, we are doing that early groundwork early enough in the cycles that is not the first conversation we're having with those people. That's the last conversation. And that's what we're really hoping for, given the scale of both this late organizing, but also candidly, the week before Joe Biden dropped out, we had more volunteers sign up than that same moment in 2018. So a lot of the volunteerism is sort of getting out there now, but a lot of it actually started earlier with those super volunteers who knew no matter who's at the top of the ticket, we got to do the work or else we're going to be in big trouble.
Your time and expertise are valuable, making Focus one of the most important resources to have at work. These days, professionals spend nearly half the work week on written communication, and it can be difficult to stay on task with all the emails and documents you have to get through. With Grammarly as your AI writing partner, you can stay focused and quickly get through your work with relevant real-time suggestions wherever you write. It works across 500,000 apps and websites, so it can help with everything, from brainstorming presentation ideas to sounding more confident and persuasive in emails and reports. For 15 years, Grammarly has offered best-in-class communication support and enterprise-grade security on a business model that doesn't sell your data. 93% of professionals report that Grammarly helps them get more work done. Download Grammarly for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's grammarly.com/podcast.
So let's drop back a little bit, because I think so far it's been very easy to follow. You've been very clear, both of you. But not everybody listening will know what a minivan is.
Yes, yes.
So talk us through the process of, you know, I go on your website, they send me to Bucks County, I end up in PA1, which is in fact where I ended up, and I go to the local office, which is a local party office, it's a storefront, and then what am I doing?
Yes. Well, so first off, when you're still on the website and you're still figuring out where, you know, let's say you've picked PA1, but you're not sure what to do, you'll be given the option. Do you want to donate? Do you want to knock on doors? Do you want a phone bank? Or for these final few days, write letters. The last day to write letters is October 29th, so those can sort of get mailed out. So you'll be given those options. If you select the canvassing option, you'll be given the opportunity, depending on where you are, if there is a carpool or a bus to go with others and you'd like to do that, you can join that. So if transportation is a barrier for you, we solve that for you in most major geographies. Then whether you drive yourself or you go with others to that location, chances are a lot of folks, before they have physically gotten to the location, some level of anxiety has taken over and they're like, I don't know what I'm going to talk about. I don't know what to do. So we have volunteer orientations that oftentimes are for people to get comfortable before they get into the car about like what's physically going to happen when I go there. What do I need to know? A lot of our folks are so type A, they'll say, well, I need to read every bit of Kamala's policy platform. And we sort of, part of the training is, no, you don't. You just need to be a great listener. You need to be curious, et cetera. So some of that often will happen completely optional. But for some folks, that's really important because they're so nervous about not doing an amazing job because we all care so much about this election. Then once you get to the office, whether through a carpool, through a bus, or on your own or with a friend, you'll be greeted by a volunteer or an organizer. And you do not need to know anything about what to do there. In most cases, what they'll say is, do you have a smartphone? And if so, they'll walk you through how to download an app called Minivan. And what Minivan is they'll give you a piece of paper that has a map on it with lots of little dots, and it'll have a number on the top. You type in the number, and then you'll get a map saying, these are the 40 voters or however many voters that we'd like for you to talk to today. And that map is connected to Google Maps. And so you'll type in your Google Maps if you're going in your car, the first address, and then you'll be able to click on that address and it'll say, today you're going to be talking to John Smith at 123 Main Street. And it'll say, John Smith is an independent, he's 63 years old, and you'll have the script on that app. So everything that you need to know is there. And it's an incredibly intuitive app where you'll be able to easily say, oops, John Smith wasn't home, or I talked to John Smith, and you'll be able to select on a scale of 1 to 5 where he's leaning in terms of number one, he is definitely going to vote for Kamala Harris. He's enthusiastic. Number five, he is definitely going to vote for Donald Trump. And then the in-between, is he leaning one way or the other, or is he undecided? And then maybe John Smith is really excited about volunteering. You'll be able to sort of select that on there, all in the app. For someone who is like Democratic leader Chuck Schumer and does not use a smartphone and uses a flip phone instead, then the campaign will offer a paper packet that accomplishes the same thing, but it's on paper. And in most cases, for new canvassers especially, they'll have you go out in a pair. So you're with a buddy, and sometimes folks will split up their Minivan list so that I'll go on one side of the street and my canvassing buddy will be on the other side of the street. And then once we get to the end of the street, we will, you know, we'll debrief how the thing is going. You'll also get a stack of what we call canvassing lit or literature. And those are kind of glossy pieces of paper with whatever the top messages are that the campaigns from the Kamala Harris campaign all the way down ballot want to make sure that they're leading voters with, so that if you knock on John Smith's door and he's not home, you're able to leave that piece of literature on the doormat, on the front steps, whatever the case may be. The only, and they'll say this in the training, the only place you're not allowed to leave it is inside their mailbox, because that becomes a federal crime. So that's the only rule that really is important for a canvasser to remember, is the two rules are listen well and don't put lit in people's mailboxes. And the rest is more intuitive than most people think.
So here's a question that I'd like Jeet to tackle first, which is the media, insofar as we can believe them, say that that Trump has offshored his get out the vote to Turning Point, the Charlie Kirk thing, and then to the people Elon Musk has hired, and that it's a mess. You've been doing this for more than one cycle. You know what you're doing. There are groups like Pennsylvania Stands Up, Make the Road, who are also doing this, this is not their first rodeo either. You know, insofar as I've been out with all three groups, you all seem extremely well organized and extremely good at funneling people to where it feels like you're not wasting your time. So why is it still so close? That's, in other words, you have one army with, you know, modern weaponry, and you have another army that's got blunderbusses, and yet the army with blunderbusses is still holding 49% to 51% of the country.
Well, but I will say that the polling would not measure, like, the get out the vote effect. Like, the polling does not give you a sense of what the electorate is going to be like on voting day. Because the pollsters don't know that, none of us know that, so they use models. So it could well be that the models that they're using are underestimating the Democrats. If the Democrats overperform, it will be because the polling missed the get out the vote differential. So I mean, I think that's the sort of simple answer to that. I mean, the other aspect is, you know, the Democrats face genuine uphill battle, as do incumbents all across the world. I mean, you know, coming out of COVID and the sort of economic problems afterwards, it is a little bit harder. And I think that's made the race closer. On the Republican side, I mean, I do think that Musk and the other stuff is a mess. I would not underestimate the core Republican get out the vote, which is actually the evangelical churches. That is actually what they have. And those are organizations where, you know, you have people that you see every Sunday. You can, like, you know, gather them up together very easily and, you know, get them out there. And the Democrats have that a little bit in terms of the Black churches, but not to the same degree. So, yeah, I mean, in some ways, the two parties aren't quite comparable. I actually do think that, and a lot of the messaging Trump is doing towards the end, with the emphasis on the trans issue, I think is actually designed to, like, energize that evangelical base.
Well, it's interesting because, I mean, I remember in 2016, Sean Spicer telling me how much they were spending on training young organizers, you know, the party. This was actually December 2015. So it was, nobody had any idea that these people were going to be working for Donald Trump, least of all Sean Spicer. But, you know, they said, we've got 40,000 organizers who've been through our training. And in fact, they had a very impressive get out the vote operation in 2016. It's kind of interesting that Trump has taken it over and then disbanded it, because it did a good job for him once. But I guess I also worry about, this is something that Mika Sifri didn't put in his article this morning, but he did say to me in an email. He said he worries that the Harris campaign has squandered a lot of the energy that they first unleashed in August and is now running an updated Hillary Clinton campaign, too transfixed by data and the power of targeted advertising. And I wonder, you know, are we so in love with our own tech and our ability to get to voters that we, meaning the Democrats, have neglected the whole question of policy, message, and, you know, constituencies? Jeet, that sounds like more of a Jeet question first, but I'd be very interested to hear Yasmin.
I also want to hear what Yasmin says, but I will say, I mean, I do have some of that worry. As I've also written about in my columns, I will say that I don't think we should underestimate the enthusiasm and the energy. Like, I actually do think there are a lot of Democrats, especially on issues like abortion, that are very mobilized and do actually also want to see the end of the Trump era. And I would also say that, like, a lot of the messaging that might seem awkward to us is national messaging. But I actually think, like, if you actually look at what's going on in the states, the local messaging in the swing states is actually very focused on actual policy in terms of abortion, social security, economic issues. It's very bread and butter. And I actually think I'm a little bit less worried about the Democratic Party messaging than I was, like, say, a month ago.
Nationally, it really looks like they're laser-like focused on Republican women in the suburbs.
And but I don't think if you actually, but from the reporting I've been seeing about what's actually going on in the swing states, I actually do think that they have a base mobilization strategy. But I mean, yeah, I do want to hear what Yasmin would have to say.
Yeah, I think it's a really important question. I have a couple thoughts. One is, I had a debrief after the 2020 cycle with a former House rep who had lost his election and who deeply believes in organizing, former frontline House member. And as we were talking about, I think my overall North Star in this work at Swing Left, before Swing Left, is how do we make sure that the party is investing in deep, year-round, long-term organizing. I do not believe we will win elections if we don't invest that way. So I was talking to this ally about that North Star and how we could make sure that that happened for the 2022 cycle. And something that he shared with me that has been really orienting is he described when he was a member, he talked to a lot of then Tea Party folks, now MAGA folks, but around their economic anxieties and find tremendous common ground. In his district, they'd come to his office on the official side, and he would kind of get underneath exactly as Jeet was describing, like, how do you do the deep listening, those deep conversations to kind of cut through the noise? And he would leave those conversations feeling really hopeful about the degree to which he'd persuaded people to give him a chance and to have their ears open to voting for him as a Democrat. And what he found is that over time, in between those conversations, if he had one of those conversations in May, the follow-up with the same group of voters at an in-district town hall in July or in September would just be that much harder, not because of anything he had done, but because of how many hours per day that same group of people had been listening to right-wing radio on their way to work. They'd been tuning into Fox News at home. And so his question, which I continue to grapple with, is not, does organizing work? We know organizing works. The data shows it. As Jeet said, the deeper, more quality conversations are how we win through organizing, especially in marginal elections like this one. And we are kidding ourselves if we think that that is the only thing that matters. And the aggressive expenditures that not just Donald Trump and Elon Musk, but so many of the kind of industry groups are making through giant independent expenditures for television ads, for TV ads, it makes the organizing work harder. And so I think it's a both at Swing Left, we deeply invest in organizing, and we also raise, this cycle we will raise close to $20 million. We've raised just about $6 million for candidate campaigns because, number one, we believe grassroots should fund campaigns, and that's really, really important. And two, we have to be able to defend ourselves when disinformation is running the airwaves that spread lies about candidates and make it that much harder for that volunteer to have those conversations. So I say that just as a grounding kind of like, it's a both and. We have to be playing both games, and we do need to follow the data in this heavily, heavily, not just polarized, but calcified political environment where it is so hard to move most people. We're talking about such a narrow group of people, both in the mobilization world of the people who are with us that we have to convince to not sit on the sofa, but to vote, but also in the persuasion universe of those suburban voters who have been drinking disinformation Kool-Aid on social media and have been have started to absorb lies that seemed absurd a couple years ago. And now they've seen it so much, so casually on their social media that they believe it. We've got to be engaging with both. And it is about the ground game, and the ground game must be complementary to the sort of hard communications and press and digital, et cetera, because the pace of that is so fast that if we only invest in ground game, that's a mistake. And then it will feel sort of contradictory to, it will feel like a contrast to what folks are hearing rather than a complement to the real information that they're getting in their increasingly crowded media landscape.
We're coming to the end of our time, and we're coming to the end of this campaign. What are each of you looking to see, would like to see, and worried about?
Okay. In terms of what are we looking for is like the closing message that I think really addresses those swing voters is, you know, we're getting some hints of what that's going to be. But I would be most hopeful, what I would like to see, is one that really addresses, what I think are the economic issues and the issue of abortion and really hits hard on that. And that's really where the ads seem to be pointing. And I think that's what I would like to see the national campaign kind of close on, because I actually think that Donald Trump has a lot of very unpopular policies that have done a lot of harm already. And I, in terms of, what I'd be worried about, coming, when we're the election day, for me, it really is that sort of, base turnout. Like, I'm not quite sure from the polling that we're seeing that we're, the party's quite there yet with young voters, people of color, and working class voters. And there's some evidence that it is sort of consolidating right now. And my worry would be that if it doesn't consolidate, and my hope would be that it does. So
I agree with everything that Jeet said. I'd say the things that I am looking at are what is the scale that we describe this final phase of volunteer engagement as a hockey stick, meaning it's just a really sharp exponential curve of engagement. And so from a pure data perspective, I'm looking at the slope of that line of how aggressively are we growing in terms of our volunteer engagement in the final two weekends. To me, that's going to be critical as a stand-in for how many voters are we reaching in the final stretch on exactly the messages that Jeet is talking about of abortion and the economy are in every single canvas, from House districts to Senate races to the presidential. When we do surveys of our volunteers asking what's coming up, those are head and shoulders above everything else. And so are we doing the proactive messaging at scale that we ought to be doing around those issues? Totally aligned with Jeet. I'd say the only thing that I would add in terms of things that I'll be looking for in terms of exit results, et cetera, in addition to our base turnout, is we are seeing a lot anecdotally, also in the data around women who do not want their husbands, swing women, white women in the suburbs especially, but swing women in general, who do not want their husbands to know how they are voting, right? And there's in the realm of gossip that I cannot say is true or not true, but what we are hearing is, and what we have heard from a lot of folks is the level of Google search around the question of, can my husband know if I voted for Kamala Harris, that was for 4 weeks in a row one of the top Google searches. Again, I don't know if that's true or not, but I'm going to spread the gossip because it completely tracks with what we're hearing on the doors. I do think that's really important. It's sort of, we know people lie in surveys. I think this is a different kind of lie of sort of like women just not wanting their husbands to know that they are quietly rebelling. I will be looking out for that, especially in an election that's really about women's health and abortion rights. And then the thing that's worrying me that we've not talked about here, but I think is important for listeners to start thinking about, is how long the election results take. Of course, we are all worried about. I think we remember how hard that was. But the distance between when the first calls are made, so if the AP or CNN or whoever is the first call, and then the last call being Fox News, I think, the distance between those calls was 15 minutes in 2020 on that Saturday after the election. If there's a widened gap, if that takes an hour, if that takes 2 hours, the risk levels in terms of belief among MAGA Republicans of the integrity of the election, regardless of outcome, but especially should Kamala be the winner, which of course we feel bullish that we're going to pull it off. That really worries me. And that worries me from an integrity of our democracy perspective, for how long this election drags on perspective, and also just from a basic sort of like stability perspective, right? Like the rates of violence violence becomes like a much higher likelihood if there is a fundamental distrust of the integrity of our democracy, as we well know. So I'll also be looking at, again, like how quickly, not just how quickly are the calls made, but how quickly is Fox News calling an election after the other networks? Again, should we be victorious?
Very interesting. All right, now I've got another thing to worry about on election night. But listen,
But you know what? We always say the antidote to anxiety is action. So anyone who just felt really stressed out by that can go to swingleft.org and sign up to go canvass. anywhere close to them that will be determinative of the outcome of this election.
And I can attest that if you do, you will have fun and you will feel that you have done something.
So, exactly. Exactly.
Thank you very much, Yasmin Raji from Swing Left, Jeet here from The Nation. Thank you for joining us on See How They Run.
Thank you.
Yeah, it was great to be on.